Magic the Gathering today is not the same game first made in 1993. In fact, we would argue it's not the same game that was played in 2019, and certainly we are not the same players. So it begs the question, what does Magic mean to you? And is it the same thing that has always brought you to the table? Welcome to Magic the Flavouring, the Magic the Gathering podcast where we talk about all things magic, flavour design and lore. I am your host, Andy Mann.
Hello, this is Nathan Cancel.
And today we are going to be recording something that is wholly unprepared and completely raw, as it were. We're just going to chat about this game and the fact that we've been playing it now for quite some time and doing a podcast about it for well over a year, and the fact that the world is changing around us and this game has changed with it, and how our relationship and the relationship of those around us has kind of warped around this game. I think it's fair to say, like, I mean, obviously this sounds a bit moot, the fact that we're doing a podcast about it, Nath, but like, Magic is a very big part of our lives, right?
Yeah, there's nothing else in my life that kind of occupies as much, almost like devoted time, where I feel like I have not only have to but want to, like, it's equal amounts of want and have to dedicate time and energy and cranial prowess towards it. Like, it's as much as I want to engage with it, it engages with me. I think that's the interesting thing about this game, right? If it meets you halfway with a lot of things, but be it, you know, story, art, in the actual gameplay itself, there's lots of different parts of it that kind of seep into your subconscious, whether it's like the way you look at things or the way that, you know, you process problem solving, even to where you interact with the people around you. We've met some amazing people over the last year, developed some amazing friendships, great communities. It's literally like all encompassing. So that's not putting it lightly at all.
No, not at all. And it's one of the few sort of things that we definitely knew we wanted to talk about when we started this podcast. And I think we did an episode recently where this came up again as well, is this idea of how does the game make you feel? Like, as much as we talk about the lore and the mechanics and the artwork, the end point, the kind of distilled nature of what we spoke about this game, is that it makes you feel something. It is art. Magic the Gathering is art as much as it is also a game, or at least it is to us. And that's a big part of what makes this game so diverse, is to some people it is a strategy card game first and sort of an artistic endeavor second, whereas to us we kind of flip that on its head often, and all this sort of way of approaching it. And the way that this game makes me feel, both when I play it, when I engage with it through the storyline, or whether I engage with it through the art, or just talking to other people about it, not only has that always been something very visceral to me, and I think it has to be to get into a game that has such a stupidly fucking complex rule system, you have to be able to engage with it, but it's also something that has changed over time. Do you know what I mean? This game isn't the same game it is to me now as it was when I started playing in 2012. It's not the same game that it was to me when we started this podcast, like, you know, 14, 15 months ago. I don't know. Do you feel the same?
I feel like it's not only how we look at the game, it's how the game self-identifies, and then by proxy, how we then again interact with that. Like, because the game itself and how we perceive it, whether you're, like, especially if you're like an old school player or something like that, like, you didn't necessarily you had your own precious way of looking at it. Maybe it was a game that only you and a select group of friends knew about, that no one else knew. It's not like, it's like playing Final Fantasy versus FIFA. Right, like, it's not this. You might have had your own little microcosm. Whereas now, because it's come a little bit self-aware, because obviously it's much more prevalent. Gaming in general is much more like socially. I don't even say the word acceptable. It's just way. It's way more involved. Right, even Post Malone was just recently on Game Night. So it's that kind of idea, right? If it's becoming a forefront of pop culture and modern culture, and then when a company becomes self-aware of itself, and a game can kind of start playing with the meta. Obviously, we talked about this last week about meta jokes or that kind of thing. Again, then how do the player base that had this little personal microcosm, how do they then engage with this game that's kind of expecting you to engage with it? In a way that it wants to, it's starting to dictate how we engage with it, right? So then you have to then maybe undermine your own opinion of it, or maybe take a step back and understand, maybe to separate out those humble beginnings from, like, you know, the grandiose spectacle that Magic is now.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's an interesting thing, isn't it? Like, trying to engage with something outside of itself a little bit, like that kind of meta aspect. When I heard that Post Malone was going to be on Game Nights, it was surreal. And it wasn't necessarily surreal because I didn't think celebrities or whatever played the game. Like, I know many celebrities play the game. It's very well documented that half of Hollywood plays Dungeons and Dragons and the other half plays Magic the Gathering. Like, that wasn't weird to me. It was just, it was interesting to see this very sort of different energy, and the way that on that episode of Game Nights, which was a very good game of Game Nights, no spoilers, it was a very good, enjoyable episode. But even in that episode, they, in their talking heads, spoke about how a lot of people would be watching that episode because Post Malone was on it, not necessarily because they had any idea what Magic was, and that if they wanted to learn more about Magic the Gathering, there's resources to do so. And it's just that kind of interesting thing of seeing something that requires, because it is, as big as Magic is still a fairly niche pastime and a niche hobby, but seeing it engaging with the larger zeitgeist of the world in such a direct way, it is an interesting thing. Like, I sort of balk at this sort of stereotype of the kind of, you know, only certain people play this game or only certain people play that game, because it is, not only does it lead to gatekeeping from within the community, which is fucking bullshit, but also, like, the term geek chic has been around since like fucking 2001. Do you know what I mean? Like, there is no such thing as geek chic anymore. That is the culture. Like, we're all in a state of arrested development. You are the same person from the age of 18 to 40, so you like what you like and you don't like what you don't like, you know, to put it very crassly. But it is interesting seeing this world open up, and that was to do a lot with the pandemic as well, and the fact that we're now just about coming out of lockdown here in the UK. I know the US is, some parts of the US have been a lot more open for about a month now, and they're returning to LGSs. But the fact that we're all locked inside, and the fact that even in like a very popular city like London, if you can't go out your front door, it doesn't matter if you know 100 people down the road that play the game, you have to look for other ways to do it. And, you know, you start engaging with people on Spell Table, and that's a thing. And suddenly you're playing with someone in Brazil and another person in the US and another person who was from your local game store, and you're having this, like, you know, expanded sort of sentiment. And there have been so many people that have picked up the game during pandemic that had either not been part of the game before or had, you know, found the game years ago, left it and then come back to it, because it gave them something to latch onto and something to dive headfirst into that was still really accessible, even at a time when it shouldn't have been. Like, in all imaginable concept, it couldn't have been. And I think just that alone makes coming out of the other side of this big part of our history of the world like just a very different world to play this game in. You know, it sounds very grandiose what I'm saying. It sounds very sort of huge, but I truly believe that it does factor into things.
Oh no, I mean the last year is a huge part of the current generation, right? I've been saying this for a fair few years of the reason why there's this almost almost passive kind of feeling in culture is that because this generation hasn't had a great struggle, a great war, or whatever it is to strive against. And okay, a pandemic might not be they have the same quality of casualty, but it still had a huge casualty and implication. It's like a big thing that affected the entire world, and the world kind of had to deal with it in its own way. And it's funny that a game that requires socializing in a time that socializing was limited in its most extreme fashion in a whole generation grew more than it receded. Obviously digital, if this happened in the 90s, for example, it'd be a very different situation because you wouldn't have had the social accessibility to, you know, to millions of people around the world. So it's a kind of a lucky happenstance, a conflux of like the digital age just being at a point of where webcams are accessible, microphones are accessible, everyone's kind of starting to engage in this streaming and those kinds of services. So it's almost like it was almost the perfect silver lining, right, for a really horrible dark time. It's like, well, actually this is the perfect time for people to be able to engage in this game in different ways and for it to grow and have the idea of their little world as they opened up to everybody. And it might have been that, as say, during a time where a lot of people would have found themselves socially stilted, a lot of the people that were already socially stilted have now exploded onto the scene, right? And now they've got a mass of people that they can engage with the game, and suddenly their opinions matter more because they've got to compare them against other people. Suddenly things they like and they don't like aren't just internal monologues, they're discussions, you know? And it's I think, again, to take something that's hugely negative and be able to turn that into a positive is really exciting for someone who, and for the two of us, for example, who are so engaged in the game that kind of makes able to kind of make the most of it. Yeah, it's a very again, it's a very strange time. I don't think you can talk it down enough. Like, it's one of these things. Yeah. It's easy for people to go, oh, let's forget about the last year because obviously it's a bad thing. But no, shine a light on it, kind of focus on it because it is a celebration. The fact to manage to succeed and grow in such a hard time is something to celebrate.
Mm. How do you feel as someone? So, I mean, for people that are only just listening to this episode now and they haven't necessarily listened to a lot of our stuff before, or if you've listened to a lot of our stuff before and you're still maybe haven't picked up on like sort of our magic origins, if you like you were someone who, when I first met you, it was my second year of university, it was your first, and you were pretty much the only person in our entire like university friendship group, which was essentially our whole subject, because we were all drama kids, like with three different pathways, but we're all drama kids. You were the only one that played magic, or at least that sort of, you know, had a collection that we could all play with. And slowly over time, you got more of us into playing with your collection. And there was about six or seven of us, but it was still relatively small. And then a few of us carried on and a few of us dropped off. And then I started buying my own collection and stuff. And then obviously our friendship grew towards magic a bit more. But how do you feel going from someone who, for so much of your like formative years with the game, was pretty much on your own, save for a couple of friends that you directly played with? Like, EDH wasn't really a big format when we started engaging with the game together. It was only kind of a few years later. So for the longest time, you were only playing with one or two people directly. Mm-hmm. And now you're in a world where, okay, you're not currently living in London, for example, so you can't always go down to our LGS, but you have an LGS where people know who you are. You have spell table set up. You've played on streams of the content creators that you've never met before in person. And you have opinions and a voice in this game that's heard all around the world now. And we get people like, you know, commenting on our socials or like, you know, sending us emails talking about magic with us. Going from two people or one or two people that you shared this game with to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. Like, that's a mind fuck, right? That's got to be.
Yeah, this is the thing. Like, I spent a lot of my early, like, childhood playing games like Final Fantasy or Pokemon, or, you know, the kind of games that everyone's invested in now and everyone talks about. But at the time, I didn't necessarily have other people to engage with it because geekdom, even back then, because it was, you know, you didn't have necessarily mobile phones or social media, that kind of thing. I mean, unless you went and met up the next day and talked about the stuff that happened, your gaming experience was in isolation. And it's funny because I even remember being like, I found a bunch of cards. This is how I managed to get into Magic the Gathering. I found a bunch of cards in my playground as a kid, and I had no idea what to do with them. So I think I spent a good year sat in my room just like mulling over the artwork, getting completely immersed in things. Like, I had a foil only possession, and I still to this day look at that card and go, "Oh, it just looks so cool." It was so, and it's even funny because even that, like, I got to a certain point in my life in my Magic career where I actually despised like foils. I was like, it ruins the card. It kind of, they don't highlight the right things, and yet still like one of my biggest my most lauded cards in my collection in my early days was a foil only possession, which is kind of ironic. But I like to call the time when I started playing with you is what I call the EDH transition.
Sure.
Because I used to play essentially what was a kitchen table magic with one of my mates, of where we'd buy a bunch of cards because he was a few years older than me. He had a bit more spare money, whereas I had the investment into the game, so it kind of balanced out a little bit. I didn't have the ability to invest in the cards, so he could do so, and then I could invest the rules into his life, and we can play just the two of us. And we played through like sets like Lorwyn and Eventide, going into Alara, that kind of thing. And I didn't necessarily at that point. It was a personal thing, right? There was no comparison of other decks. I wasn't necessarily building any particular list. The idea of like Thoughtseize and Bitter Blossom were almost like this almost like commodity aspect, like cards. I'm like, oh, who cares about one mana discard spells? Like, you know, I was way more of a Timmy, right? Sure. I was way more of a Timmy. And then I hit uni and found other people that could engage intellectually with the game. My 60 cards, what I like to call like kitchen table format, of where it was anything goes, right? I was playing a morphed Core Blade deck that was also a Super Friends deck. It was like a four color Super Friends Core Blade deck. It was obnoxious compared to some of the other decks that I built for other people. Like, I built a Birthing Pod deck that would switch between Abzan and Jund depending on kind of like where I wanted it to go, that kind of thing. As soon as I found other people that I could play with that could then test their strengths, their weaknesses, the play styles they like to play with, like certain people preferring green, some people preferring black, that kind of thing, it allowed my collection to kind of almost almost like graduate, because it wasn't being used, it wasn't being utilized properly. It was just kind of almost like a private hoard for myself, which I still stand by. My collection is my hoard.
I remember you got us into your kitchen once to sort out all the cards, because we were all just so happy just to be like in and around Magic cards that you had your like giant see-through plastic box of like that you'd hide under a bed, and you were like, right, yeah, we're going to sort it by color and then by CMC and then alphabetize it. And we were like, oh yeah, okay. And we just got a bunch of alcohol and just chilled out in your kitchen. Looking back on that now, I would have told you to fuck off.
Yeah, 4 hours in, we got halfway through it, maybe. Yeah. That's ridiculous.
I mean, that's a big way that I've changed with the game that I would not do for that for you now.
Hell no. I don't know how I managed to convince you all to do it. Yeah, it was fantastic.
Oh, we were stupid. We were theatre students. We were fucking idiots.
Like. Yeah. I mean, I guess, and that's the part of my life that I remember saying, the EDH bit, where my magic experience, instead of being a singular... my personal experience with it was then expanding into my own little play group, right, of then how we played and the common ground that we found. And it's funny because I did come away from Magic for a fair few years. I still engage with it. Every set, I'd probably buy a few cards here and there. I'd still engage with all the story. I'd still see every spoiler season. I don't think there's been a single set since Lorwyn that I haven't actively seen every card that's come out, engaged with, at least a little bit for my personal experience. But at that point... coming back and finding out players like yourself, or there's another guy called Charlie, or even when you said people like that you knew from uni that had picked up the game over the years and then came back to it. And years later, I'm like, wait, you guys are still playing? Well, that's fucking amazing. I can't believe you're still engaged with this game. In fact, you're probably more engaged than I am with this game. And then there's maybe some blurry years in the middle that I can't remember how I ended up getting fully entrenched back into it. Obviously, I'm now utterly buried in Magic, basically, just put in cards. Like a literal point in my life, like a couple of years ago, I had to get rid of, it must have been like 20,000, 30,000 odd cards.
Yeah, you had a big clear.
And it was literally just swamped in commons. And I was like, what the fuck am I doing with my life? But that was, again, another point of graduation where you realise you can actually cut all of the chaff, all the little bits that got you first into the game. You know, the cards like Fist of the Anvil and Goblin Rager. And I'm like, oh, I don't need you guys anymore. You know, I've grown up from you. It's like when Andy gives his toys away, you know, spoilers. When Andy gives his toys away. And it's almost that same sadness of where I'm like, I don't need you anymore, so I'm going to throw you away, but that doesn't mean you're forgotten. Like, it's your place in my heart, cards. So yeah, in terms of like actual like emotional engagement, I mean, obviously it changes, and I'm glad that I've kept hold of my the whimsical adoration that I have over certain games and certain franchises. Like Magic's one of them, Final Fantasy's one of them, Pokemon's one of them. Things that I'll never change the way my nostalgic feelings, you know, that I still have for them. Like I still look at, say, certain cards, and then I remember it's like getting time warped back 15 years to my childhood and being like, oh god, it's even longer now. Oh shit. Don't talk about time. It's fine.
Oh no. Well, I'm not generally a nostalgic person, you know, and I think this is why this is one of those proofs in the pudding things for me where I know that Magic really has a home, is because I am pretty a poor nostalgia. I like, if anyone starts thinking like, oh, do you remember when, and thinking about this, and oh, weren't we just so young then, I'm always like, oh, shut the fuck up. Like, it really sends me cold. It's not, I don't like it about myself. It's led to some very horrible conversations where I've had to say in front of a group of people, oh, I don't want to think about that, when they're just trying to have a nice time. But it's true. But with Magic, it is very different. One of my fondest memories that's attached to Magic the Gathering, and just like a lot of our time spent in uni, was I think we were in Richmond, which is in southwest London, for anyone who doesn't know London that well. And our university was in the next town over, in Twickenham. So we're sat in Richmond, and there's the Thames goes through Richmond. We're on the bank, and it's a beautiful summer's day. There's a comic book shop in Richmond called Raygun, which was the comic book shop that was used as the set in the TV show Spaced. Was used as, I think it was the interior, it was either the interior or the exterior, they use that for Spaced. So if anyone wants kind of like, oh, little reference there. And you'd bought a pack of it must have been either been Return to Ravnica, I'm trying to think of what the card is because I've got the card in my brain. I think it might have been Gate Crash. What was the last set of that?
Dragon's Maze.
It was Dragon's Maze, because it was Beetle Form Mage, the Simic wizard insect human thing. And I remember you opened up a pack of Dragon's Maze and you were filtering through. And I think you took out the token, you took out the rare, and then you gave me the rest of the booster pack. Because I was like, oh, I'm thinking of starting up my own collection. I think I said to you offhand, you're like, oh, here's the cards. And I just couldn't believe that you had given me these fucking Magic cards. Like, I was like 19, 20. Like, I wasn't like a child. And yet I was holding these cards like they were like a brand new toy that I'd got given. And I was showing my girlfriend at the time, who like was in our friendship group, and she could not give a fuck. She was like, okay.
Shocking.
I was like, oh, look, it's got flying and like it has this ability. And like, look at the art, look at the cool art. And it's blue, green, because they're like the scientists, the crazy scientists in this Ravnica world. And she was like, yeah, sure. I distinctly remember her being like, I couldn't give a flying shit, but I was so excited about this beautiful mage. And like, I can't remember what the other cards are, but I distinctly remember that one. And I've got to say, like, that excitement of opening up packs and digging through cardboard has not abated in the slightest. Which kind of brings me on to one of the sort of like more down things about how my relationship has changed. And it's a very, very recent thing. It is a little bit of a downer. It is a little bit serious, but it has to be said, and I think I've alluded to it on this podcast before as well, it has to be said that my financial situation, or just in my general life, the ebb and flow of jobs, and obviously the fact that we've just come through a global pandemic, I am not on the winning side of the wage packet coming out of the back of this pandemic. Don't get me wrong, I'm going to prefix this now, and I think this will also call back to when you said like our generation doesn't have any like wars to fight. I will say now, this is obviously from our Western perspective. There are many people around the world, even in our own countries, even our own fucking towns, who are in a much worse off position than we are. So any whinging I'm about to do, that is with that acknowledgement of that perspective. But I got made redundant after the first lockdown in the UK. So during the first lockdown, I was furloughed. But even on a furlough of the wage that I was getting, that still doesn't make for a great situation, but I was still able to pay my rent. Then after the furlough system ended, before they kicked it back up again, just in time for everyone to have been made redundant, I was then filtering through other jobs that I could do during the pandemic. I've had 2 or 3 zero-hour jobs on minimum wage, and all respect to those managers that gave me those jobs, because they kept a roof over my head. But I just about was able to keep a roof over my head with some savings that I had. And so to come out the back of the pandemic, and now things are opening back up again, our industries are starting to sort of slowly build back up again, I can start getting jobs that actually pay me the wage that I need to be paid to live in an industry that I want to work in. I can now start thinking about, well, in a few months' time, I'll have some disposable income for this game. But for right now, I don't. And that has been pretty much the same for the past sort of 8 or 9 months. I haven't had extra money to spend in big ways on this game. It's the odd single that I've bought, or the odd booster pack, for example. Or the odd command. I bought the pre-con for Strixhaven because I saved up to buy the pre-con. And I think I also got the bundle as well. So that was my big splurge over the past sort of year, was on those two products. And I think my relationship to the game is such that when this new set comes out with Modern Horizons 2, which has just had the pre-release, which is a very interesting thing in its own right, it has been disheartening to see that Wizards of the Coast, or at least Hasbro, who own Wizards of the Coast, have seen the rise in profits through quite a difficult time as an excuse to keep pushing the price and lower the accessibility of the game at a time where a large majority, or a large section, I should say, not a majority, of the player base can't afford to buy the product in the same way that they could before. You shouldn't be made to choose between your hobby, your food, and your roof. Do you know what I mean? And it sounds dire to say, but I will not be buying any Modern Horizons 2 product because I simply can't afford it. And that relationship, I think, has changed even just in the last few months. I also did, I will say, just as because I did put it on Twitter, I don't want to seem just like a liar, I also bought a box of Commander Legends, which that was the product when I bought it that I was like, oh, I actually might need to change my habits because that didn't sit well with my bank account. Yeah. And that really made me kind of take a step back and think, do I need, how much does the joy of opening up booster packs for like gambling, what is essentially gambling, but with something I'm willing to gamble on, how much does that outweigh my wanting to play the game and still have money in my bank account? Do you know what I mean? Can I literally afford to do this anymore? And it's, I don't want to sort of say, oh, this game isn't for me anymore, because you can engage with something on any level that you like, and you just have to kind of take ownership of yourself as where you can pitch yourself. But I will say that Modern Horizons 2 is maybe the first product where I've looked at it and gone, I don't think they are thinking about people like me when they're making these games. And don't get me wrong, like I, because like you and I, for example, aren't necessarily in the same situation. And there are people at our LGS that have been, you know, very lucky and sort of, you know, are able to engage with the hobby in quite a large way because their jobs have thankfully, God fucking thankfully, been able to continue in different ways, like working from home. And I know they listen to this podcast, some of them, and I would never, ever want to make people feel bad about enjoying their hobby and spending their money on it. It's just, I think it would be underselling it to say that the pandemic has definitely widened the gap between people's kind of economic situations, and Wizards don't seem to have acknowledged that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Oh, 100%. I feel like the FOMO aspect of Magic is much more prevalent in the last year, even up to like the last 2 years, than it ever was when I was younger. I'm going to preface my and it's not going to be a rebuttal, because I completely agree with everything you said. I'm going to preface this by saying that I was looking through E3 highlights today, and one of the first things I saw was that they're upping the price of an average game to about $70. Now, as a kid, if it cost me more than £15 to buy, and I don't know why I've said Final Fantasy like four times this episode. If it cost me more than £15 to buy Final Fantasy IX, I probably wouldn't have been able to get it as a kid. And yet, those 150 odd hours or whatever I spent on it, or even Final Fantasy VIII, because the danga, 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 the fucking triple triad, that will live with me forever. Like, if I couldn't have got them at such an entry-level price for someone, and I guess, yeah, economics change, blah, 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 whatever. And things obviously like Warhammer exist, of where you kind of have to invest the money, but that's also the thing you invest your time and your artistic ability into, right? You don't get to like edit your Magic cards, right? And this is the difference, is even prefacing with that idea that games are now £70, and you might, and that might be a psychologically defining game for you, you know, like Halo Infinity's coming out, whatever. Like, so the kid, for a kid that's playing that for the first time, that might define the rest of his the rest of his gaming life. But that's, you know what you're getting when you buy, you know, Halo Infinity. It's not that you buy Halo Infinity and, oh, sorry, it's Bubsy 3D, actually. Oops, yeah. You know, that idea of, I don't buy packs anymore. I don't remember the last time that I had that feeling. I bought a box of Command Legends as well. And instead of the financial implication of like, oh, maybe I can't afford it anymore, because I look at the other things that I buy in my life and I'm like, okay, maybe I'm just justifying, or at least maybe I'm giving myself too much of a hard time when I spend a little bit on Magic, considering it's something that brings me so much joy that I invest so much time into, you know, especially when you're crafting a deck together. It's like buying paints or buying paintbrushes to make a lovely painting or whatever. But I after buying that box, I mean, that's the last box I ever buy, because I didn't get enough of the things out of it to make it worth putting such a large amount of money into it, right? And I could have done so much better just investing in some singles. I could have bought like a Vampiric Tutor and then all of the other singles I wanted for the set for the same amount of price. And I would have, instead of having all the cards that I had with some things that I didn't necessarily need, that, okay, yeah, I'm glad that I opened, and I still have the, oh, I guess what I'm going to get. And, you know, okay, I've got a couple of hole breaches and stuff like that, which is only exciting as well because of the spoiler season ahead of time, which tells you which cards to be excited about and not excited about anymore. Mm. It's not like back when I bought my first pack of Mirrodin and I had a Darksteel. First rare, still, this is my favorite anecdote. My first rare that I ever got from a pack was a Darksteel Colossus, and I nearly shat a brick. You know?
That's a big pull.
You know, it's like, right? It's like opening an Eldrazi, right? Or like the fact that the pre-release for Rise of Eldrazi, they gave you an Emrakul, a promo Emrakul. It's like, look how cool this stuff is. Like, that kind of excitement I don't get anymore from packs, because there is, yes, this idea that you buy a pack and you get basically nothing. I mean, yeah, we argue often about how they do so well on design, artistic design as well, like all of these aspects that make every single card worth taking your time and looking at. You do cracker pack videos of where you kind of highlight that every pack, every card has flavor and stuff to take out of it. Mm. But when that's a collector set, you know, and it costs like fucking £25 for 15 cards, yes, it's really cool. You get six rares in it and etch foiling and all this kind of thing, and that's really, really cool. That is really exciting. We also paid £25 for that.
Yeah,
you know. It gets to a certain point of where, like, you kind of, it's the difference between going out and buying a cocktail at your at a nightclub and it costs, you know, three times what you could buy the ingredients for at your local Sainsbury's. It's like, well, if I'm making it at home, maybe it's not the same as when I go out and have the nightclub, because you've got the music and you've got the social aspect and everything. But realistically, when you're asking this much money for things, like, you kind of need, and this is the thing, right? Is they're not going, oh, let's try and give them as much bang for their buck. They're going, well, if we're going to price it at this, how much something do we need to put into it to make it worth that money?
Yeah.
And that's kind of the wrong way around of doing it. I understand that they're in a situation where they lost like a big aspect of their business. This is Hasbro I'm talking about, you know, with the whole Toys R Us thing. And from a business model point of view, They have to, you know, justify that and, you know, triple the profits across 3 years. None of that has anything to do with my enjoyment with the game. These are just things that I happen to know that I have to kind of, even in my brain when I'm thinking about things, go, yeah, but because of this and because of this. I'm like, I don't want that adult side, that financial side, kind of telling me how so I can justify businesses needing to make profit. I understand that, you know. I want you to play to my little kid in me that still wants to open packs and have lovely, lovely, cool things, you know. And maybe that doesn't, you know, exist anymore. Maybe that's a commodity that I don't have anymore because my engagement with the game has changed, right? And maybe that's something that as a newer player you'd still find that ridiculous excitement. Maybe it's something that's a personal thing because I've now, you know, changed my engagement with the game in the way that I look at it and appreciate it. I don't think so, because I think a lot of players feel the same. I feel like when you've been playing the game for 25 years, it doesn't just happen in the last 2 years that you kind of get that feeling and that opinion. I feel like that's something that it would take a long time to build up. And if everyone's kind of having that same thought that you are, especially when they should understand that the players that some of the players that play the game can't keep up with it. Look at something like Arena Equity. If they cared about people being able to play with the cards, no matter what, doesn't matter. Okay, yes, fair enough. You've got to pay more for cardboard. You know, fair enough. Cool, I get it. But the digital side of it then shouldn't also have this crazy, you know, wild cards economy that means that you can't play the decks you want to play. That should be your way to play it for free, right? MTGO was always ridiculously low. They even had ticket prices compared to like real world prices. And you'd be like, holy shit, I can play a Cabal Coffers and Duel Lands for like no money at all. Yes, because that's the whole point. Fucking play our game. Yeah. You know, so no, I don't think you're, again, blowing anything out of proportion. And it's funny that the more decisions Hasbro makes, the more I have to justify their decisions instead of just going excitingly, yeah, give me anything. You know, like the Pokemon franchise, I don't critique Game Freak very much for comparing some of their newer games compared to other companies, where I'm like, well, the graphical quality hasn't really gone up. There's always the same problems with the systems. Every mod out there is better than the base games. You know, there's all of that kind of thing. Still fucking love it. You're still giving me two different cool games this year that my brain goes, oh my God, we're getting remakes. And oh my God, you know, they're doing an open world thing. Cool. That's the engagement I want. Magic doesn't do that. And I don't know why outside of this understanding and awareness of that financial push, which is annoying. Because I feel like it's the only thing, apart from certain other, you know, situations that have arisen, like, you know, from certain artists, certain ways they handle a canon of characters, that kind of thing. You know, the typical world bullshit that still creeps into our game. That's the only thing that I kind of really feel that kind of holds it back from still giving me that same joyous feeling. And the only reason why that's been justified is because my play experience over the last year has been better than it's ever been. And it kind of distracts me a little bit. But as you say, when you're surrounded with other players that are able to engage that a little bit more, you notice that FOMO, that fear of missing out, that little bit more. When you're like, I just actively cannot keep up. Like, I don't have time at the moment to play the game. I've had a week where I haven't been able to play Magic, and I can feel it in my bones. Now, if I feel like if not time constraints, which is my own choice, and it's financial things, which might be completely outside of your control, that's stopping you from engaging with the game, that's got to be horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. It's not like Modern Horizons 2 isn't even the most expensive. If I was to buy a Modern Horizons 2 booster pack today, it wouldn't be the most expensive booster pack I'd have ever bought in my life, because I spent money on Ultimate Masters when Ultimate Masters packs were like 10, 50, 11 quid a pack. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I think I spent over the course of that, like I was buying that set, I think I dropped like 100 quid on like 10 booster packs over, I think I did like one a week because it was every time I went down to the game store, right? So over the course of 10 weeks, I spent £100 on Ultimate Masters. So, like, really, that should be my high watermark. But not only has the expectation, my expectation of what should be in a booster pack versus the expectation of what actually is in a booster pack versus my economic situation versus my attitude towards what I place importance on in my life, like the game, my life, my partner, my health, whatever else, it's all changed. And that's kind of what prompted me to ask you to do this episode, is the fact that I have seen a lot of people kind of whinge and moan about certain aspects of the game. Some of it justified, some of it I think isn't justified, as ever. But I do think that we are living in a very different world with Magic and the world around us now than we did when Ultimate Masters was kicking around. And I think actually maybe some of those fears and some of those anxieties around the game are justified, especially when you think that this game has given people around the world such a beautiful thing to latch onto, that with that heightened expectation of the beautiful side of it, the crushing disappointment of some of the uglier sides of it also rises in the same tide. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a reason that people take to Twitter to shout and scream. And, you know, for every twat who's talking about something that's utterly ridiculous and demanding bullshit from people they've never met before about a game that is literally just a game, there is also another person who has a genuine anxiety about their hobby that they feel is getting away from them. Mm. And, you know, you can't hide it. I don't want to talk about like sort of the downest things, because there are actually a lot of positive things that have changed with the game for a while. But I do want to ask you a little bit about, you kind of pushed on it there a little bit about the fact that artists in the game, like Noah Bradley and Therese Nilsson, and like inequalities in Wizards hiring policy and the sort of the many different failings. I was trying to think of a different word there, like insensitivities, but it's much more than that. It's pure failings of representation of like a character's sexuality and gender and race within the narrative. Like all these big things that kind of came to light over the past year. We don't need to go into them all in detail, because Christ knows, like we were talking about them at the time. And, you know, all of those things, looking at them as part of your hobby is quite a big step, really, because I think what everyone wants to do with their hobby is to enjoy it. So when you have to force yourself, and sometimes you do force yourself to take a step back and look at the thing that you love and go, what are the things that are really wrong with this that I need to stand up and say I think is wrong about it? Like, I think almost in a positive way, but just in the fact that it's negative that it had to happen at all, it forces you to be more critical about your fandom. Mm. And I definitely feel that these days, I am far more aware of my own fandom and my own engagement with this game in comparative, like in comparison to other people's and other people's experiences, like people of, you know, different gender and different race and different sexuality. I'm forced to empathize with them, rightly so, in a way that I didn't when I first started playing this game. And I have to acknowledge that there are all these failings in my hobby. And that doesn't necessarily mean that I turn my back on it for good, although many people have, and all power to them if that's what they feel they needed to do. Mm. But when I first opened up my very first booster pack of Magic cards, or when I ordered that Orzhov pre-constructed 60-card deck and it came with two booster packs in the back of it, fucking hell, do you remember when that used to happen? And I got really excited about the foil treasury thrall that I was able to then put into a deck. I was never thinking, I wonder if the artist who illustrated this piece of work is a good person. But now you have to, because the world is far more aware. Mm. Like, how do you feel about that sort of changing attitude towards the critique of this game outside of the game itself?
Well, most hobbies are specifically like an escapism, right? They're a way of kind of, I don't want to say word avoiding, but the way of like distracting yourself from the boredom of modern of what I mean, I guess maybe less, because now a lot of people can build their careers within their hobbies, but for a lot of people it's a way to kind of escape from the troubles of the world, and to have then the thing you're using to escape with it highlight it and maybe even present it worse than what you're trying to escape from, that's really disassociating. And it's one of these things of, if you are, I mean, the amount of times I come across cards that are in my decks that I'm like, I it's such a pretty card, I really love what it does, and yet I still have to have that thought of like, maybe I should take it out because it's a support, it's supporting a person or an ideal that I really don't support. And in this modern day, I mean, I've always been of the open-minded opinion, right, of do whatever you want to do as long as it doesn't hurt other people kind of thing. So I've always been a little naive in taking for granted the amount of places that there are shortcomings with this, and I didn't expect, I mean, it's funny because I mean I should have, you know, it's a big you know, Western conglomerate. I mean, it's,
yeah, there's nothing, there's really nothing wrong in admitting your naivety as long as you acknowledge that you are no longer naive about it. Like, you know, being naive about something and being ignorant about something, as long as it's not willful or on purpose, is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. It's just a shame that more and more parts of, more aspects of my life kind of tick that box of quality control, right? If I have to mentally quality control it and then judge, it's not, there's very little purity left in the world anymore.
Sure.
And maybe that's just again another thing of growing up into the world and understanding how situations and how certain minds and certain systems work and in place. So obviously we are at a point of where it's so easily highlighted. Again, technological era is really good for this, of where, yes, okay, the twatty opinions get a forum to speak into, but most of the time they get shouted at, and the echo chambers thankfully are just mostly echoes, right? So I feel like we are at a time of where it's sad, it disappoints me every time I learn something new, but it's also good to know that it's being highlighted and then realistically likely to be solved or addressed, or shone a light at least. And there is again, it's funny, we're in a year where it feels like, even if they are deliberately, you know, backpedaling putting the tape over the hole instead of actually fixing the hole.
Yeah.
Even if there is a slight feeling of that, at least there's the intention, right? At least there seems to be a movement. And I know that the voices behind the disapproval they're getting aren't going to shut up. They're not going to quieten down, because they shouldn't. And so it makes me feel like, okay, a problem's always going to be a problem until it's highlighted. The fact it's the problem is now highlighted, yes, it's a bit more ugly, but it means that problem then might get solved, right?
Yeah.
Instead of just hiding the problem away. And again, maybe this is part of, like, you know, the whole financial side of it and that kind of thing. There are so many aspects of this game that will lose their whimsy to me, because I've got to an age of where I understand the implications and everything, all of the idiosyncrasies of why and how things happen. Most of them are disappointing, you know. Most of them just come down to someone being a bit shit, not trying hard enough, having the wrong opinion, or not being able to fulfill with the right intention, or that kind of thing. The only way I can see it and still balance it is that, again, like, there are so many positive things that I see in the game that keep me not only enjoying the game, but kind of keep me surprised. They keep me engaged. That's the thing about Magic that I've always liked. The game constantly gets more difficult and more complicated. And that's the thing that engages me, is that as long as we point out the issues that are surrounding the things, and that allows me to then go, cool, I can still engage with the thing. If those things are bigger than the game itself, then obviously the game has to die, right? Whereas if the game itself is still an engaging, interesting environment, you know, that only the people invested in it, but the things that they're doing with the game, the different directions they're taking it, which is something obviously we're going to get into in a minute in terms of, like, the expanding universe, as long as that's a supporting and I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good word for it, because I'm not a fucking prophet, right? I don't know what the lay of the land's gonna look like in a year. And I'm all for the more is more. I'm all for I like the direction we're going in. I feel like, because there's been so many stutters over the last couple of years, I feel like I can't see a time where there won't be some stutters. And seeing some of the things they're gonna do in the future, I'm like, there's going to be more stutters, there's gonna be more mishandling, more misrepresentation, there's gonna be more, we think we know what you want, and maybe we'll get it wrong, and then maybe it's bad that we kind of criticize them for trying new things, as long as they keep trying new things that are positive and fixing the things that are bad instead of just trying new things to cover over the mistakes of the past. You know?
Yeah, it's an interesting balancing act. I suppose there is no real answer to it, because, as you say, it's just something that it's just going to keep happening. We can only hope that the game evolves to a point where it happens a lot less, or, like, you know, the holding their hands up to mistakes is far more sincere and far more prompt, rather than just waiting for player backlash to kind of take hold. I will say that, you know, we mentioned earlier about the fact that something that has changed for us is the fact that, you know, the game engages with us much more than we are engaging with the game, like, now versus when we first started playing. It was like, you know, the cards almost exist in a bubble and we're the ones that go and play the cards, whereas now obviously the community from the company itself is so much bigger and so much, you know, they're much more vocal and they're giving us new things all the time, and we're now, like, kind of, it's almost like a back and forth rather than us just engaging with the game. But something that I think is equally amazing is the fact that whilst our community has gotten so much bigger, so too has the kind of collective response to the game itself. You know, whereas before you might have gone, oh, I think that artwork's maybe a little bit dated now, you know that there is enough voice, enough support around the world for people to go, oh no, that artwork from 25 years ago is not okay, or we think this person who works for the company is problematic and we don't want that in our hobby. And you're able to communicate that in a much more fluid and a much more big way, and that is kind of how you get to talk to corporations. No one who's sitting in the Hasbro, you know, top offices are going to give a flying fuck if one person tweets at them going, I don't like your card game because X, Y, and Z. But if a whole community can go, your card game needs to change because of X, Y, and Z, that's a much more powerful force. And I think that, for me, is something that has changed just by virtue of the fact that we are now part of a large community, and the community is always growing across the world. It's the fact that you do get to see other opinions, you do get to be open to other people's experiences with this game and not just your own, and sort of see that, you know, not only are you not alone in your own opinions, but there are other opinions out there that you kind of need to integrate into your own, because they're showing you things that you didn't see before and that you were naive to. So I think outside, and this is all outside of just playing the fucking cards, I think it's such a microcosm in how, you know, global communities can act and react and grow together, that I think at a time where everyone is so divisive and so divided in their own bubbles, being able to reach out on common ground of a card game to other people outside of those bubbles, and then through the game, empathize with them and see their lives through a different lens, is quite an amazing thing. And certainly something when I first fucking turned a card sideways for the first time, not something I ever thought would happen to me.
No.
You know?
Yeah. I think that's one of the biggest, one of the things that make me so happy is that a lot of the things that I liked in isolation are now liked with a massive, massive win, like a win full of community. Like there was the silent, that silent community that didn't have the opportunity to talk because they didn't have the technology. It's like, cool, that's not only now they have the voice to be able to talk with, but they've also exponentially grown. And it's like all of these things that I'm like, I used to like this as a kid. Everyone's going, oh man, you used to like that. Oh, that's so cool. You used to play it back in the day. Like Crash getting a,
Remaster.
God, yeah, the gin hit me there for a second. And Spyro doing the same thing. Like, it's all these kinds of games that are now getting revamped and was like going, hey, you know this thing you really, really loved? Like, oh, we're going to love it again and give it back to you again. Like, you like the good things. You like the good things from back in the day. Well done, you. And you go, oh, thanks. I thought it had good taste, but no one seemed to agree with me. I didn't have anyone to talk to me about. Now I've got everyone. You know, that kind of feeling. It's very heartwarming.
Yeah.
It's a good time to be a nerd, right?
It is a very good time to be a nerd. Talking to other people about this game brings me very sort of nicely. It's a nice little segue onto something that I've been thinking about as we've been chatting. I've been speaking about the fact that I've had a few different jobs over the past 8 or 9 months since my redundancy. And in every single one of those, without fail, I've had multiple people in each job that I've been able to talk about Magic the Gathering to. And when I think about that kind of hit ratio, and look, all of these jobs have been London-based. All of these jobs have been in jobs where other people in my shared industry have also gone into those jobs. Oh, I've got fireworks. If anyone can hear banging behind me.
Oh, I did. Fireworks.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. So obviously this is somewhat of a closed circuit when it comes to like the kind of jobs that I'm taking on. But so easy to talk to people about this game and this card game, because I don't need to worry about the fact that I'm a new person in a job or that, you know, the kind of crisis that we're all going through, that we're able to bond over this card game so quickly and so readily. And then that means they get a good sense of you as a person. You get a good sense of them as a person. And then suddenly your working life is able to kind of be a lot smoother and a lot easier because of a shared card game. Like it just kind of struck me that actually, like, there have been people that I've not played a single game of Magic with that I've met over the past 8 months that I've still engaged with talking about Magic than I have done talking about anything else, you know. I think, yeah, it's just, and again, I don't think that would have been something that I would have ever have spoken to. I think up until like even like a couple of years ago, I would never mention the fact that I played Magic the Gathering, because who the fuck knows what Magic the Gathering is? And is that worry? I think some people do worry about the changing face of this game and the fact that now it is becoming so popular in a way that maybe dilutes some of the aspects of the game that they liked. Maybe like it's almost like a secret shared language, you know, of the game, or, sure, you know, if certain art that they, styles that they like, that was maybe slightly inaccessible, like, you know, like sort of like some late 90s like Magic artwork, and, you know, you wouldn't get necessarily anymore, not because it's problematic, but because the art styles have changed. And that is generally because, you know, the game wants to appeal maybe to a slightly broader audience. And, you know, maybe some of the themes like the Strixhaven School for Mages set, I don't think would have ever existed had this game not been as popular, because it's a very accessible concept, you know,
yeah,
as opposed to Dominaria and the Weatherlight Saga, which were very inaccessible, you know, laws and concepts.
True, right?
So, I mean, so the fact that this game is getting so popular is maybe scary to some, but honestly, for me, it's been an absolute boon, like, you know?
Yeah, okay, well, this is funny, right? So here's a question to you then. So I think part of the reason why Strixhaven was so successful is because there was the general social understanding of, like, Harry Potter, right? There's that port into fantasy, whereas Dominaria is maybe more typical D&D kind of style fantasy, which obviously, ironically, we're getting a D&D set this year,
yeah,
which might actually be more disassociative for the average player. But then for those that have played D&D, it's going to be one of the most engaging sets they've ever played in their life, right? That's a weird thing in and of itself that I guess we'll talk about when the set drops properly. But riding the success. It's almost like Watsy took the success of Harry Potter and went like, okay, you can't trademark the format, right? You can't trade the format of like, because Worst Witch is like a school for witches.
Yeah,
you know?
We spoke about this at the time because obviously it's look, it's a little bit of a dirty secret that the Strixhaven set is a Harry Potter set because of all the stupid fucking bollocks that J.K. Rowling is spouting into the world.
Yes.
Yes, we will say that other IPs about magical schools are available and informed the look and feel of Strixhaven, but Harry Potter did also, yes.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that kind of obviously is a big selling point for a set like that, and it kind of allows the social engagement to be more easy, right? So then looking forward at certain other sets that are trying to deliberately engage specific communities, like, say, Warhammer. Or say, Warhammer's, I think, a little... in terms of geekdom, it's way bigger. But in terms of general, like, world populace, it's, Lord of the Rings is much more of a Post Malone than, say, Warhammer is.
Sure, yeah, yeah. Like, well, yeah, Lord of the Rings is like a... It's like almost a media empire these days. But, you know, yes. it was the most influential and widely read fantasy epic, I think, even with the sort of the Harry Potters and the, you know, Dark Materials out there, I think Lord of the Rings is still king of the castle.
Oh my god, a Dark Materials magic set. Oh,
yeah.
That'd be so cool. I mean, it'd be really normal. I know, sorry, too late. But yeah, so my question then is, obviously, it's going to be massively dependent on how they treat the IP, right? Of whether they do the film one, which is what most people know about, whether they do like a Tom Bombadil card, which most people are like, who the fuck's Tom Bombadil? He wasn't in Lord of the Rings. You know, Gandalf the Cobalt, you know, played by Ian McKellen, you know. Like, it depends on how they handle the IP, right? But I mean, I think I already know what your answer is going to be, but this idea of being more typically socially aware, like engaging these other communities, I mean, do you think that's more disassociative of what magic is and was? Or do you think that's moving it more towards kind of where it should have gone already? Because it's one of the few IPs that doesn't have like a film series or a TV series. I mean, obviously all the story we'll probably talk about in a little bit as well, you know. But in terms of engaging with other IPs, I mean, do you think this is a good thing for it? Is it something that it should have been done already? Is it something they probably should have avoided and maintained the narrowness of it? I mean, that's a no automatically, that no game should stay narrow. But I mean, I
with Lord of the Rings specifically, or like the kind whole of.
Well, because both of these things are almost like a divergent pathway of one, something that's more something that's more publicly known, and then one thing that's more like known specifically to like the geeks. And this is kind of a preface to where they're going to see other things going. Obviously, we'll probably talk about the new Secret Lair being announced as well. Like, this is the trend, right? This is the trend that we're likely to see, yeah, of where it's going to be picking from other IPs a bit more. It's going to be engaging more deliberately with other IPs. Do you think this is a good thing for magic? Do you think it's a bad thing for magic?
So when Universes Beyond, that's what it's called, isn't it? Universes
yes.
Beyond. When that was first announced as something that was going to stay, because they did the Walking Dead Secret Lair, and then people lost their shit, rightly so. The Walking Dead Secret Lair was bullshit. I don't want anyone fucking atting me about, oh, well, you said that, like, you're a hypocrite because you don't mind the others, but you don't like Walking Dead. The Walking Dead one was shit. But then they obviously announced that this was going to be a trend going forwards, and that they had already set up other IPs that they were already
that's too late, bitches.
They were already printing. They were already like, I wouldn't be fucking surprised if Stranger Things was fucking already printed by the time.
Yeah, and they just held off on it because they knew that the public opinion wasn't great. They're like, oh shit, should we keep it? Let's give them something good first. Let's give them the best set in Magic ever, and then we'll drop off the other set. Yeah,
I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't have been shocked. Those were first announced, I was wary. I did sort of think, because it wasn't so much that they were trying to appeal to more people because they were trying to do popular things. That wasn't my issue with it. I mean, I say this now, in hindsight, I don't think that was my issue with it. I might have said it at the time, and this might be me actually just being a hypocrite. I don't think I ever said that was my issue with it. I think really what my issue with it was, or at least that's how I see it now, is that it was almost like they weren't putting faith in the world that they had already set up. Like, when I tell people who don't play Magic the storyline of Magic the Gathering, it does sound a bit generic fantasy, or it does sound like a little bit maybe cheesy. A little bit. It is a bit cheesy. You have these wizards who can bounce around a multiverse, and the multiverse is essentially a framework to sell card games that you can always change the look and style and aesthetic of. You can have your cowboy set, you can have your pirate set, you can have your fucking Winter Wonderland set. And it's all kind of stitched together in this framework. And to people who don't play the game, and many who do play the game, I will say, the narrative and the storyline is just a marketing ploy. And it is. We've admitted on this podcast it is. That is essentially what the narrative is. It's just a way to sell the cards better because they're putting extra sort of creative IP on it. It's just that, you know, we see the narrative as being far bigger thing than maybe others do. And so I kind of feel like maybe my initial issues with it was that it was going to dilute the confidence in the narrative that they were trying to tell at a time when what we needed was a strong hand on the narrative because it was in the fucking toilet and has only just about started to get anywhere near back on track, although that is debatable. I actually now have really come around to it. I've come around to the idea of Magic having other IPs, not least because it's happening. And going back to how I've changed my attitude to Magic, I think I'm far more open to the term of it's going to happen anyway, you might as well get on board or get out. And I would much rather keep playing this game than not play this game. So I think that's kind of where I sit with it. If people want to have a Warhammer set or a Stranger Things set or a Lord of the Rings set, it almost doesn't matter what I think because they're happening and people will enjoy it. And if it means that it gets more people playing Magic, then it gets more people playing Magic and it's fine. Do I have to change my idea about Magic in terms of what the card game actually is? Is Magic a system? Like how Dungeons and Dragons is a combat system or a world-building system that you can overlay any theme that you want onto, really, if you just put it onto a D&D sourcebook. Is that what Magic is? Magic as a game is the tapping and the abilities and the stack and the power and toughness and the casting costs. Mm. And really the pictures and the flavor is whatever the picture and the flavor is. Maybe if we thought about it more like that, we could open ourselves up to enjoying the game with these Universes Beyond cards, rather than worrying about the fact that they'll take away from the main narrative. And I think if we were in a world where Arena had actually eroded the paper game completely, I would be a lot more worried. I mean, in that world, I might not be playing the game because although I don't mind Arena, I'm a paper player. But let's just say I was playing the game and the paper game had disappeared, but Arena was still around. I think I would have been far more concerned. But the fact that the paper game is not only thriving, but being supported by the company, it's not just us buying more of it. It is the company making more of it and making products for it. Fucking too many products, really. I think they have committed to this game enough that there is room in the multiverse for Lord of the fucking Rings. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, adding Magic together, Magic source books to D&D didn't ruin D&D, did it?
No, and it didn't ruin Magic. And actually, do you know what? There were, I mean, no, it didn't, sorry, it sounded like I was about to disagree with it then. I asked on Twitter, people listening to this podcast are so fucking sick of me like talking about our Twitter. If they haven't followed it, they're not going to follow it now. You really fucking should though, people listening. I think I did a tweet or a poll or some shit. This is months ago where I said, is it bad or is it good that D&D and Magic are doing a crossover, blah, 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 blah. Almost everyone was like, no, it's fine. Whatever. Get on with it. And then there was one person who was very, very adamant against it to the point of being aggressive, right?
Shocking, right? That the people that are against it get aggressive. Yeah. Imagine being aggressively positive about something.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's Twitter, you know, so yeah, it can only go one way, really. And I wasn't necessarily hugely in favor of the notion. I was fairly neutral about it, but their reaction to the fact that D&D and Magic would have any sort of crossover, be it with a source book or with Magic cards, so negative about it, shocked me into being like, wow, that really isn't my opinion then. Because if I'm so anti their antiness, then it just actually goes to show that maybe I don't quite care enough in a negative way about this that I, you know, I might as well just get on board. I don't have to play these cards. No one has to play these cards. No one has to engage with it. The only time it matters is if someone sits down at a casual pod, like an EDH game, or if these cards are legacy and vintage playable, you know, which I'm sure they'll be playable in some formats. They might have to literally look at them. Mm. But you don't have to engage with them any deeper than face value, really. And just let people play the game.
Yeah.
Just let people play the game.
I guess I'm trying to work out who would be annoyed by it, right? Because the Spikes don't give a shit anyway, and they're the ones that are more likely to play. And it's, I guess this is a point that we've completely ignored. Standard and like constructive formats are kind of like on on the DL, right? Like they're kind of dropping out more in favor of things like EDH. And
well, we'll see how Modern goes with Modern Horizons. Well, I think that's going to be lit a fire up under its ass.
Yeah, but even like the way that they're supporting like competitions and stuff like that.
Oh, sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. This is what I mean, right? If we're the competitive scene tends to be more of your spike players that don't really give a shit about the story or whether it's a fairy or whether it's, you know, like, you know, a blank artwork or whatever. Again, massively hyperbolizing the psychographic. But then the only ones I can imagine getting really annoyed are people like Vorthosians, who would be like, but it goes against the story of the game. Like, yeah. And it's like, but then the person who's playing that deck might be as strong a Vorthosian in the other for a Lord of the Rings set or wanting to build a Lord of the Rings set. I know people that have built Lord of the Rings decks and now
we had Christian Gregory on the podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. Who can actively do that with cards and actively. And again, I'd be curious to know the whether. She thinks that the deck will be better or worse for instead of having to find facsimiles in the game already, now being going, oh no, here's your One Ring. You don't have to pretend your Soul Ring's in.
I guarantee she will be on our show again talking about Lord of the Rings. Kristen, if you are listening, then you know there is an open invitation. When that set drops, you are very welcome to come back. And yeah. We can either have an hour of us laughing and joking about how awesome the set is, or we can have a bit of a fight. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, those are the kinds of things I'm like. That actively makes me interested to understand the engagement with it, right? I don't think there's a single thing they could print that, unless they printed something really, really cool, like, say, the alternative art for the Cabal Coffers that I know is going to be out of my price range, you know, to bring that back around full circle to that. That's like an individual point of, like, unless it's things like that, I don't understand what they could possibly print that would make me want to play the game less. I guess it just gets to a point of where if the cards no longer feel like magic cards, and I don't know where that line is, I have no idea, because artistically, I haven't found it yet.
No.
And artistically, they've pushed the envelope massively, and I've still yet to find a point of where I'm like, as long as it's got a magic back, it's a magic card, right?
Yeah.
That's the kind of the point. You'd have to go a very, very long way for me not to find... Like, you could do magic cards in the style of Pokemon cards, and I'd like them even more, right? There's very, very little you could do with this game. Maybe that's just me showing my hand of where I'm very easily pleased, but I'm not, because I'm critical of like everything in my life. So clearly... It's not, again, maybe it's the system that's within Magic that kind of makes you forgive all of the other nonsense that kind of surrounds it. So it'd have to go a very long way to kind of make cards that are supposed to be played within the game that I will refuse to play. I'm just interested to see kind of how, like, again, I think the point is that the community is so porous. It's a strange analogy, but we're such a porous community because we're willing to absorb in, right? And then we kind of hold on to it before we, you know, maybe splurge out some kind of opinion. But we're very good at absorbing bullshit and kind of making it palatable, you know? Like, yes, we'll air out our frustrations and our angers about certain things, but realistically, most of the time, coming out the other end, it's usually like, maybe we overreacted, or it's all right, they won't do it again next time, you know, that kind of feeling. And I feel like you have to take a lot of steps in the wrong direction before I feel like you've turned your back on the game, right?
Yeah.
So, and I'm more interested, and that's the thing, this is the thing that Magic's always got me, and whether it's the story or whether it's the cards themselves, it's always a matter of, it always keeps my interest. There's never been a spoiler season that I've been like, I'll check it out when it releases. I'm like, no, show me every fucking card day by day. You know, like, yeah. They've just released Flumph, you know, a random card from D&D. And I was like, I wasn't expecting there a new card from D&D. And again, immediately my excitement as it pops up in my Reddit feed. I'm like, God damn it, Nathan, are you ever going to get over this stupid game? No, probably not. So yeah, it's an interesting one. I feel like the D&D set's kind of almost a perfect primer for this, because again, the cards feel very alienating because they use certain words or certain vernacular or certain abilities that do feel very... not unmagic, but they feel deliberately...
They're telling a different story.
Yes, right? And it's, you can tell that they're trying to go slightly differently, like the copious use of the number 20, for example, in some of the cards. Like, that kind of feel... It feels like, you know, that you're still playing the game of Magic, but you're trying to use that game of Magic to funnel a different story, to pour into a different universe, into a different world. And I don't really see how that can be a bad thing, unless, you know, they do something. And again, I can't possibly fathom what they could do that would make me want to play the game less, you know. So yeah, it is an interesting one. It's just, I guess we're on the cusp, right? And it's really hard as someone who's fairly willing to be flexible with this game. I've been playing it for so long. There are so many things that could have kicked me off of the rails, and I'm still chugging along, you know, at full speed. So yeah, it's one of those things that's quite interesting to be at the beginning of a wave with such a larger number of people paying attention to it as well. Like, back in the day, it didn't matter necessarily what I thought outside of my own opinion, because there wasn't other people to tell me if it was right or wrong. I mean, I don't say I listen to other people's opinions and that tells me what to think, but, you know, like, sometimes I might miss something, you know, sometimes I might misunderstand something, and now there's a community that you know, checks and balances you a little bit.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm interested to see kind of how it's going to go. Again, I have the same response as you do, is like, look, if it means more people get to play the game, who's it really hurting?
Yeah, I think it's very easy to have this game mean so much to you. And it kind of comes back to this sort of, almost like the kind of unsaid premise of this episode. I think that's been on my mind, maybe more than I realized, because I've mentioned it several times in this episode. But the idea that this game has become so much more, because that is effectively, if to answer, how has this game changed for you since you started playing it? This game has become so much more to me than the game that it was when I started playing it, to the point where during the past year, and all the shit that we've all had to go through collectively as a human species, all the different people, you know, the people that went and started baking sourdough bread or started cultivating gardens.
Hmm.
And, you know, we'd already started the podcast by this point, but the fact that we were able to throw ourselves not only into this podcast, but into this game and engage with it on a way that we would never have dreamed of before, it's become a lot. So for it to become so much, you kind of feel like it is your personal thing, even more so maybe than when it was only you and two other people that you knew that played the game. Because even though more people are playing it, your relation to it has grown so much. And I say you, I mean the raw you, because it's definitely true of me. And I'm sure it's true of a lot of people who are listening now. I mean, who would be listening to this particular podcast if you weren't incredibly invested? Because right. We're fucking niche within a niche. Like, hello, listeners. We love you dearly. Thank you so much for being here. But I feel like with that extra pressure on it being so important to you, if anything happens in the game that you don't like, it's very easy and very understandable to then suddenly go, oh, I don't like that, ugh, get it away, don't want it in my game, without realizing that really what that amounts to is gatekeeping for other people. Because for other people, 100%. The game also matters that much, and it might matter in a slightly different way to you.
I guess it's because our opinions and our engagement matters a little bit more, right? It's not just our own individual opinion about something, it's kind of it's funny, I don't even know how to put it in words, because it's such a strange thing, because obviously we do this like talking in a room by ourselves, but we're obviously talking to, you know, dozens of up to hundreds of people, and it's like, it's very difficult to kind of like put that in context when you're just a guy sat in a room, you know, just talking about the thing that he loves. But yeah, my opinions seem to matter more. I feel much more pressure when texts come out to engage with them more. It's maybe not my lust now for the game, it's more my lust to feel that I'm still relevant within it. And that's a whole nother existential thing that I don't want to really want to think about too much right now. But, you know, it's much more one of the things that it just, everything in this game seems to matter much more to people at the moment. Like it because there's more people engaging with them, because there's more of the game engaging with them, their opinions and their engagement with the game matters more, not only for themselves, but in the other direction as well. So it's a good question to ask, because the why and the how isn't necessarily easily quantifiable, but you've got to have at least a vague understanding of it to understand why you're engaging with the game. We've had this with certain players that we've played with, where sometimes I'm questioning, like, why are you even playing this game? Like, everything you've said and everything that you do kind of shows me that you're not engaging it in a way that's either healthy for you or in a way that even makes sense to the way that I engage with the game. I can understand various different ways of other people, the way they think and the way that they would express themselves and all that kind of thing. And sometimes I'm dumbfounded. I'm like, are you just invested because Magic's a contentious thing to talk about, and there's always something to get angry about? Is that the reason why you're in the game? Because if you're not enjoying it, fucking do something else. Go and play something else. Like, unless you're a martyr and you enjoy being angry, in which case there's many more other things that are cheaper to be angry about. Go and do something else. So it's funny thing again. I think it just matters a little bit more to people because there is a bit more personal ownership over things. I mean, most people's collections have gone from, oh, I just play a few random cards without sleeves, to like, you know, 10 decks that have all got individual sleeves and their individual boxes, and I've got custom alters on certain cards. And, you know, I've written a backstory for them. Like, that ownership of cards in your collection and the way you engage with the game has obviously gone up massively as well. I think in general the game is more important, and the amount of people's lives that are spent engaging with it, especially over the last year, has gone up. So it is, you know, it matters, and it's good that not only are people so much more invested in the game, because I feel like it can only be a good thing, but it also means that the game's starting to learn that it's invested in, and whether that's a good thing or not, that's to be seen. That's to be seen.
I will wait to see that kind of thing. As I say, like, as we mentioned earlier, the sort of treatment of pricings of certain sets. We'll sort of see whether that's a precedent for how they engage with the game more, and whether certain aspects of the game are for me anymore, and whether I just engage with it in different ways. I think, yeah, my engagement with this game will never diminish. It might just be focused in different areas. Like, do I need to worry about buying a bundle and a commander precon for every set that comes out? Or do I put that energy into building more decks that I like out of cards that I wouldn't necessarily engage with more? Or maybe do I take the time to read some Magic books that I haven't quite read? You know, that's how I spend my money on the game. So yeah, I think that's it. I think this is maybe something that's very recent, and so kind of undermines the idea of, you know, how has the game changed from you over the past sort of like 10 years or so? Because this might even be in the last week. I don't know. But I feel like my energies for this game have become a lot more fluid in terms of what I want out of it, and it changes constantly. Whereas before there might have been a 3, 4, 5 year stint where I was like, I know exactly what I like about this game. I want to do it every time I walk into the game store. I like EDH. I like having a beer when I play a game, and I like playing certain cards in a certain way. And I want to open X amount of packs a week because that's what I enjoy doing. And it was the same for the longest time. And now I think it's maybe not that. So I'm excited to see how else I engage with the game. I'm excited for Universes Beyond, if nothing else, then just to see what they can do with this game. And if it's not for me, it's not for me. And if I love it, then fucking how can I argue with that?
Exactly. Yeah, I think my biggest thing for me is that in a world where I feel like the art is making up for a lot of the story shortcomings, especially the formatting of the way sets are released and everything like that, that's all been a very conscious and active decision from the company, right? Into moving into, you don't get these large sweeping arcs. I think War of the Spark was deliberate the last time we're going to see a big sweeping arc, because for many reasons we've already talked about. So if those aren't the things that I can engage with, because that was a big part of my engagement as a kid and going through my adolescence, was that the storylines and the characters that I can attach myself to, and the expanded universe that I can immerse myself into, I can create my own headcanon for, because there's so much information out there about it. If you're not doing that anymore, then show me all these different ways that the game can be converted. Show me all these different different universes it can engage with instead of creating its own ones. And that for me is as interesting. Like, now I know what Magic is as a commodity. Show me how it can be used to represent other things. And that's actually, if not as engaging, more engaging, because it's an interesting way to look at things, right? Like, again, The Walking Dead is a big bugbear in most people's bonnets, and I completely understand that. But it was also really interesting to see how they take a character like Glenn and make them into a Magic card based on the parts of their story, right? And again, I disagree with a lot of the way that they handle that product, but I'd be interested to see how that ethos of converting other things into the game affects my engagement. It might make me appreciate the design more. It might make me miss the old lore more. It might make me hold on to some of the old characters, like we see Khan or Teferi again, and it's like, oh my god, he's back, thank god, people I recognize that I care about, what have you been doing, buddy? You know, not that either of them are both going to die in the next Phyrexia arc or whatever, calling it whatever, you know. That's for me where I want to see, is that there are certain parts of it that have diminished, and I can't help that. That's just part of growing into the game and the game growing of itself. I'm excited to see where it's going to go in the future, because I don't think yet there's anything on the horizon that makes me horrifically nervous.
No. Maybe just the price of the game.
All I've said for that is, my thought for always for that is that I'm pretty fucking happy with what I've got already. FOMO be damned. I've always got my collection. Even if the rest of the world burns down, the game of Magic doesn't die, because I can play it with... I can start again, right? I can start as I did back at the beginning of uni. I can just get a few different people to start playing. Before I know it, boom, community again. You know?
Oh, that's your answer to the rising price of Magic, is it? It's just to ditch me and the rest of our friends and just start with a fresh new group.
You're part of the group, buddy. So don't worry. If the world ends, I'm finding you, and you're stuck with me.
I'm building a Scythus deck. Although everyone keeps saying Scythus, even though I'm really convinced, and this actually might be something I put my flag in the sand about. Flag in the sand? I've always said that.
Sure.
Phrase. I don't think it's a real phrase, but I always use it. I think it's Scythus.
Yeah, because it's a size, right? But it doesn't have a Y in it, right?
It does. S-Y.
No, sorry, it doesn't have a C in it, right? And that's what makes it Scythe.
No, it doesn't.
So it changes the... I think it's the SC that turns into a Scythe. This is etymology. Like, fuck etymology, by the way, when it comes to magic.
But it makes
magic
sense
cards
for
it
to be Scythe. Anyway, I agree. I'm building...
Oh, your whiny voice slipped in there. Beautiful.
I know. I'm building a Scythe deck, and I did a list for it. I say I did a list. I've got 130 cards on a list. Okay, so nice. like a true EDH player, I have a deck. It's just 134 cards long. And I did look through it, and honestly, I was like, "Oh, I genuinely own 120 of these cards, and the 14 that I don't own, only 10 of them are like maybes. 4 of them are like I actually think I should get that card, and they range from like £2 to £8 in price. So." Maybe the £8 ones, I kind of go, nah, do I really need a Sterling Grove? Has it ever helped me in the past? Do you know what I mean? Mm. Whereas the little ones, I can go, ah, maybe I can, you know, spend a couple of quid to that, get that card. So yeah, I think I'm quite lucky in a world where maybe my relationship to the game is becoming a lot less spendy that I can still build a deck that I want. And I've got to say, like, there's a lot of hype around Modern because of Modern Horizons 2, but being an EDH player... I understand very much the idea that there's play to win, but also I'm very happy about the ethos that you can just build a deck out of what you've got in a box.
Oh, 100%.
That is very much where I am these days.
Yeah.
But yeah, all right, guys, thank you so much for listening. I know I understand that this is a much looser episode. I feel like I'm saying that a lot more these days, but I feel that's kind of where you and I are with these episodes. We'll do the occasional structured one, but for our life right now, I think having these nice... sort of decompression chats is kind of where we're at with some of these episodes. If you're enjoying this kind of style of episode, let us know on our Twitter at mtflavoring, email mtflavoring@gmail.com. my personal Twitter is @andymanface. Nathan's, yours is
at the fox in the moon.
Let us know what your relationship is to the game. When did you start playing? When did you get back into the game if you left it? Has your attitude changed now? Are you upset about some of the things on the horizon? Is Universes Beyond going to be something you engage with, or is it going to be something that will kind of ruin the game for you? Do you disagree with anything that you said? Have we alienated all of your core beliefs about this game by espousing ours as being fact? Please do let us know, because I mean, you know, magic is about the gathering, and fuck if we've not proved in the past 75 hours of this podcast there's a lot to talk about it. Nathan, do you have any final thoughts?
Do you know what's really annoying is for like the whole day I had a final thought that I was like, oh my god, I've actually got a final thought. I've completely fucking forgotten it. Couldn't have been that important.
Well, I'll look forward to hearing that as soon as I hit the stop button and record.
True.
Other than that, guys, all that remains for me to say is thank you so much for listening. This has been Magic the Flavouring.
We'll see you soon.